Desafinado Discord, theme music for Literary Discord, WPKN program about books and book publishing that tries to put a slightly different emphasis on literature than how much money a book makes or not makes. Today we have as our guest a former chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, Sheldon Hackney. He is now a history professor at the University of Pennsylvania, but he had a very stormy confirmation history when he became chairman of the NEH, because all the middle and the right wing congressmen and senators thought it was a shame to use tax dollars, as they called it with great glee, for art and theater and film, especially those films they themselves wouldn't like. He has written a book about that, which is called The Politics of a Presidential Appointment. So he seemed a very good man to discuss with the basic debate, which is seldom debated here, but which seems terribly important. Should the government, that is, should the people, support art and literature and theater, which does not somehow is picked up by the market? And you might argue that if it doesn't picked up by the market, it's not worth seeing. Or you could argue the opposite, that the best stuff is not seen because it doesn't make enough money, and that the bad drives out the good. So here we go with Sheldon Hackney. My first question to start the ball rolling is, would you say, tell us in as many words as you need, how you basically feel about, say, the West European system, where the government takes it upon itself to support arts, and the American system, where the politicians get extremely nervous when our, quote, tax dollars, unquote, are used not for bombs or missiles, but for music, or let alone photography and all that.
I am envious, of course, of the Western European system of assumed government support for cultural activities in general, though it is true that America has a different cultural heritage, basically, so it's not surprising that support for cultural activities comes a bit harder in the United States than in Western Europe. I think it is a wonderful thing for the government to support arts and humanities in the United States, and I'm very much in favor of that support. And I hope that the budgets of those two federal agencies can build back to where they were before the Gingrich Revolution happened in 1994. But I'm optimistic about that.
But even so, what the money at that point, from a European point of view, was really peanuts.
It's trivial, absolutely. And in the scope of the federal budget, it is quite trivial. So I always got a little irritated when I heard politicians say that the reason they were trying to cut the budgets or eliminate the NEA or the NEH was to save money. It's in the federal budget, these are both very small items. And that is both a plus and a minus. That is, the fact that they're very small items. I think the budget for the NEH now is $125 million, roughly. It was $177 million at its peak when I first got there, and it was cut later in that decade of the 1990s, after the new Republicans came to power in 1994. But the downside, the fact that it is so small, means that representatives and senators are not eager to spend any political capital protecting it, because it is so small, it doesn't do much for their districts or their states, and therefore they don't want the NEH or the NEA to cause controversy, because it's not really worth it for them to get involved in controversy for that small amount of money. So you have, on the other hand, since it is small, we can probably keep it going. It's a plus and a minus.
If you take into account inflation, then actually it was halved since you began, right?
That's right. And if you take into account inflation, then the peak of federal support for cultural activities is around 1980, I think.
Right. Now, what bothers me right from the beginning is the way things are considered here. I am Dutch-born, but that is not. I don't mean that that has that necessarily condemns me to one point of view or another. But I would never say I would never see it as the government supporting the arts. I would simply see it as one more program which the people, which is the government, are interested in. And if people looked at it that way, they wouldn't feel as if they were giving a handout for a purpose that doesn't interest them.
I couldn't agree more. It is just the fact that if the NEH and NEA didn't exist, then a lot of cultural activities that are enriching for people's lives would not be experienced by millions of Americans. So the NEH and the NEA actually make it possible for more and more Americans to get involved in activities, see exhibits, go to discussion programs, read books that they would not be able to do otherwise. So it really is a democratizing influence in American cultural life.
Can you give us a startling or an outstanding example of something that you did during your years, which is clearly relevant to the subject?
We did. There are so many things. The things that I believe are the best things that the NEH does actually have been going for 20 years now. They're the summer seminars for high school teachers and college teachers, two different programs. And they bring teachers together in the summer with each other to study intensely with an expert an area of knowledge that they're going to teach in high school or in college the next year and years beyond that. I think that's such an inexpensive way to allow teachers to refresh themselves and to become enthusiastic about their subjects again and to take that enthusiasm back to their schools in the fall and in succeeding falls. So that's the program that I really feel is just wonderful. Research grants as well. The special program that I ran while I was at the NEH was called A Conversation About American Pluralism and Identity. And it was a fairly modest budget, but it was a program that brought Americans together over the radio, in face-to-face meetings, on the Internet, in various ways, to talk with each other about what it means to be an American, about what values hold us together in the midst of our diversity. That ran for 2.5 years. Maybe 3 million Americans or a bit more actually participated in some way, so it's not enough to change our notion of who we are, but it is enough to affect the way a lot of people think about their heritage as Americans, because they were able to both read materials that made them more sophisticated about their understanding of the American past and the American identity, but they got to talk and to listen to Americans who are very different from themselves. All of these interactions were among Americans who came from different backgrounds. So I thought that, I still think that was a very worthwhile effort and something that I enjoyed doing.
This is actually much more complex than I realized when we began. But first of all, the program about the educational program you mentioned, where teachers get refreshed, so to speak, that seems so obvious a normal government activity that I don't even, for the life of me, wouldn't believe that the money for that has to come out of the NEH.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing, what you just mentioned, this diversity and individualism. That, from my point of view, seems a bit doubtful, because it sounds like a sort of a patriotic political thing almost, which may be very biased one way or the other without chance to redress it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Actually, it was under great suspicion from the right because they thought it was a way in which left-wing multiculturalists could indoctrinate people on the joys of multiculturalism and diversity itself in ways that the conservatives don't approve of. And you're right, it could also be used to inculcate a false kind of shallow patriotism among Americans. We did it in a very balanced way, so we made just provided the opportunity and the stimulation for people to think carefully about this and to talk with each other about it. And that, in fact, is how I think the NEH really has to run, in a balanced way that in which ideas are open for examination from both left and right in a nonpartisan way.
So were you actually inviting the participants?
We gave grants to local organizations that would mount a particular program. In one city, it was an organization that got neighborhood groups from different ethnic neighborhoods to come together to talk to each other, which they had never done before. So we gave them a bit of money to allow that to happen. We funded a radio station that was running a program in Southern California, which is very diverse, of course, and there was a call-in program. So they had a panel of more or less experts speaking about American identity, and then they would have call-in segments so that people called in and expressed their opinion. That sounds somewhat simplistic, but it actually reaches a huge audience, so it's quite worthwhile doing.
But, for instance, an organization like Resist in Cambridge or Refuse and Resist, quite radical organizations, they would have a chance to get the microphone?
Probably not, because we insisted on balance and openness, so any program would have to be open to people from different points of view.
Well, but not each program has to be in itself balanced, as long as the whole...
Well, but in this particular program, yes, I think it would have to be, yeah. What you say may apply more to, say, an NEH grant to a film.
Right.
So you're getting the filmmaker's perspective, and as long as the program at large is open to different points of view, then each particular book, let us say, that comes out of a research grant, or each particular film, or each particular exhibit, doesn't necessarily have to represent all points of view.
Right. No, I'd like, if you don't mind, sort of also speaking for the NEA, which is, I presume you were quite close to and must have had a lot of discussions with, no?
Yeah, indeed. Jane Alexander was the chair of the NEA when I was there, and we worked closely together, talked a lot.
So then I want to come down to a more nitty-gritty thing. The real idea that, well, let's say the American idea, first of all, that if a theater play doesn't stay alive or if a book doesn't get published, that simply means that it isn't what people want to see or hear, and that's nobody's business apart from the unhappy authors. If an opera is too expensive to put on, then it's not put on. I mean, the basic idea that the government, that the people in the government, that the government as a representative of the people, has as much as they have a responsibility for national security or whatever, they have a responsibility towards art, in the sense that they make possible what the market does not make possible. How do you feel about that?
I agree with you entirely that you're getting at the argument that some people make that we don't need government support for cultural activities. Just let the market determine what people are willing to pay for, and that's what should be produced because that's all that's necessary. But in the area both of the arts per se, that is performing arts and the visual arts, as well as in humanities, the people who would benefit from having those available can't pay for them necessarily, and yet the country, the community as a whole, will benefit from having a wider number of citizens actually seeing those plays or seeing those exhibits or in engaging in that reading and discussion program or seeing that art. It seems to me quite plain that the market will not support a lot of things that are good for the community. So the government, in modest ways, should make up the difference and spread the beneficial effects of those activities.
Well, perhaps even in an immodest way. I mean, you sound a bit defeatistic to me when the way you write, the way you describe this. I don't want to become the advocate for this, because I'm supposed to hear how you feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a touch of patronizingness in it, perhaps, which we can see how it would rub people the wrong way. That more people can see the opera. No, a good opera simply cannot be done in the present market situation. It can be a profitable thing. I think most good art is by necessity non-profit, and even publishing becomes non-profit for serious literature. If it is acceptable, if you can see a way of making people believe that this is a task for the people, for the government, then it would no longer be a political liability for a congressman or a senator to support this in a more active way.
That's true. I'm not quite sure why I sounded patronizing. I'm not. I'm just simply saying that the market won't support the production of a lot of things that are very good for the community, and therefore the government has a role. You're exactly right. If there's a widespread public support for government involvement in the arts and humanities, it will make it possible for the politicians to support it. And in fact, that's what happened in the late 90s when the conservatives, the NEA and the NEH were in the Contract for America. They were due to be abolished. And the reason they weren't is because of public opinion, basically. And politicians do respond to the pressures from their their constituents.
Well, I certainly didn't mean that you were patronizing, but the idea that it's sort of you have to bring art and a theater and whatever to people who can't afford it. No, I mean if you pay for an opera and the Met is full of ladies in mink coats watching it, well, so much the better. I mean, to say that no, we don't want to support their habit, that's just hit the wrong note, it would seem to me.
Well, the really interesting challenge is to get that opera out into small towns in some way, or the art exhibit, so that it doesn't travel just to the major cities, but to the smaller cities as well, so that it's seen by a wider audience, and of people who don't get a chance to go to New York or to San Francisco to see art shows or operas. So it is, in that way, it really is democratizing.
Oh, yeah, but even in New York, many plays and many books do not see the light of day because there's not enough the market in the art world, it seems to me, has very much the slogan that the bad drives out the good. But that sounds perhaps defeatistic to you, but that's my own feeling without any ideology attached to it.
Yeah.
The best books do not get published, I'm convinced of it. And the best painting. I mean, Van Gogh sold one painting in his whole life.
Yeah, well, I see what you're saying, and I think that's probably right. The publishers are interested in the mass market books.
Yeah, and it just doesn't pay them anymore to publish a book that sells 2,000 or 3,000 copies.
Yeah.
It's not interesting anymore.
Yeah, and a lot of those are really good books.
Yes, the best perhaps, or the most difficult ones, but in that sense, the best, the most interesting from a literature point of view. Mm-hmm. Of course, in Europe, also Western Europe, the government buys paintings. They don't just help exhibitions; they create a pool of paintings, which some of them go to schools and to public buildings, and others just sit in the basement waiting for a better day.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not taken. Nobody questions this. A painter gets a guaranteed market. He can't drive around in a BMW, but he can survive,
right?
With the help of the government, and that, of course, that's a whole different attitude. You know about book lending. You know that in Holland, as in France and in England, every time a book is borrowed in a public library, the author gets something like a penny or tuppence or whatever. They have a maximum sum the government makes available each year, and it is divided up in the number of books borrowed. And this is sort of like the New York Times bestseller, that kind of thing. They actually count 10 or 15 libraries, and then they average it out over the whole country.
Yeah.
This is an enormous support for writers who have a hard time surviving everywhere.
Yeah.
And I have never met a politician here who had even heard of it.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I think it's a wonderful idea. It's a bit like when radio stations play music. There is something that goes to the people who hold the copyright for the music.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and it's not done here. That's a good idea. We ought to talk about that.
How are you still an activist in this field? You're a professor at Princeton now, at Philadelphia University, right? Pennsylvania.
University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, yes.
But are you an activist in the field of government support, people support for the arts?
A bit, yes. I'm the chairman of a group called the National Trust for the Humanities, which is a private, non-profit, charitable organization that raises money from the private sector for humanities activities and to extend the programs of the NEH more widely. If you are a person who would like to support NEH activities but don't want to give money to the government, then the National Trust is the organization you ought to deal with.
It's funny that there is, with all this talk about certain American ideals, which the rest of the world must imitate, that there is this dichotomy, the government, which we sort of watch with suspicion, and should we give the government money? It's our own money and our own government, no?
Yeah, it is, but there are a lot of money of people who just don't like to give money to the government for some reason, they think.
I know some very rich people who don't pay taxes. And legally, because and they don't see anything controversial in that situation. But anyway, that leads too far apart, astray from the arts.
That's sort of the other ridiculous thing that I've run into is the feeling that if any thing sponsored by NEA or NEH is controversial, that's terrible because it's taxpayer money, taxpayers' money, and if taxpayers are offended, then it shouldn't be used for that. But, of course, the government does things all the time with taxpayers' money that some taxpayers don't like.
Of course, yeah, indeed. A lot of things, I would say.
Yes.
And they don't say, nobody uses then the word tax dollars. Our tax dollars go into this or that.
No, that's true.
There's something terribly wrong with it. Is there a very sharp line between the activities of NEH and NEA? Humanities and arts?
Fairly, yes. There is a difference, though they frequently will support the same thing. That is, an art exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art in New York might get money from the NEH to do the research that is behind the curatorial effort for the program, and the NEA will support the exhibit itself.
I see.
So, but the general distinction is the NEA supports the visual arts and individual artists and performing arts, and the NEH supports the study of human activity, that is philosophy and history and all those things.
I'm Hans Koning, and my guest is Sheldon Hackney, former head of the National Endowment for the Humanities, and now at the moment a history professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Hackney, is there, to give you a more formal title?
Yeah, I like that.
To save time, I can say Sheldon, I hope.
Please.
Is there also this differentiation that the NEH particularly focuses on organizations and that the NEA also supports individual artists and writers and actors or not?
I believe the NEA's ability to support individual artists directly has been taken away from it because of the controversies.
Oh, really? That was it?
Yes.
This Mapplethorpe business?
The Mapplethorpe in particular, yeah. And that was the way that Congress found to make sure that the NEA didn't create controversy again, which is a shame.
Yes.
But in the NEH does provide research grants to individual scholars, more modestly now than in the early 90s because the budget has been cut, but it still does that, and I think that's a wonderful service too because those things that are produced by individual scholars are used by teachers, and they keep providing, you know, benefit to succeeding generations of students and teachers.
Yeah.
So it's a high leverage activity.
Now I realize we have bigger fish to fry right now, but apart from that will always be that way. What can one do individually as a citizen or a writer or an actor to make it more visible? create a real debate about it and make it an issue rather than something on the sideline?
Well, I think there are several things to do. As I said earlier, the members of Congress actually do listen to constituents who voice their opinion. So writing or visiting your representative or your senator and telling them what you think is a very effective way to support the NEA and the NEH or other cultural activities as well. Getting involved in an organization locally that can help you do that and that is engaged in sponsoring cultural activities is also a good thing to do because together you can have even greater impact than acting alone, probably. So all those would be effective.
Right. Well, Professor Hackley, thank you very much for your participation in this conversation, and I hope that we heading for a better world.
Well, I hope so too, Hans. It's been a delight. I like very much the idea of having money flowing to authors from library borrowings. We need to pursue that.
Yeah, that's a simple, obvious thing almost. No?
Yes, I agree.
Righto.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. You have listened to Literary Discord, the WPKN program about books and book publishing. And today our guest was Sheldon Hackney, and we talked about the government and art. Listeners in New England can hear Literary Discord, the WPKN program on book publishing, on the second Tuesday of each month at 9:30 in the evening, and on the fourth Thursday of each month at 12 noon. Other stations will have their own schedule. I'm Hans Koning, and the producer of this program is Scott Harris.